It's time for From the Short Grass with Trey Schaap, a golf podcast for those who love golf, struggle with golf, and just like to enjoy the outdoors and fellowship with friends, all while chasing a ball around trying to put it in a 4 1/4 inch diameter hole. From the Short Grass is brought to you by Stevens Incorporated, an independent financial services firm with the freedom to focus on what matters most. Blackman Auctions. For over 80 years, better auctions have always been Blackman Auctions. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotels. We partner with you to deliver high-yield results by managing, developing, and investing in top-quality hospitality assets. And now, from the Short Grass, here is your host, Trey Schaap.
Welcome to another edition of From the Short Grass. I am Trey Schaap. Did you have a good Christmas? Did you get a new set of clubs? Maybe a new golf bag? Or what about that golf hat or shirt you have always wanted? I hope Santa was good to you. Coming up in this edition of From the Short Grass, I traveled to Dallas to sit down with Fred Perpall. He was elected to serve as the 67th president of the United States Golf Association on February the 25th of this year at the association's annual meeting in Napa, California. Perpall will serve a 3-year term leading the USGA Executive Committee, which is an all-volunteer policymaking board that provides strategic direction and oversight to the association's full-time staff. Perpall is a native of the Bahamas and earned his bachelor's and master's degrees from the University of Texas at Arlington and is also a graduate of the Harvard Business School's Advanced Management Program. He played basketball and ran track in college and was a member of the 1994 Bohemian National Basketball Team. He is a registered architect. He is the chief executive officer of the Beck Group, which has its headquarters in Dallas. The Beck Group is a company that provides architecture, construction, sustainability, virtual building, and technology services. I first met Mr. Perpall at the second annual Jackson T. Stevens Cup at the Seminole Golf Club in Juneau Beach, Florida last year, and reconnected with him this year when Trinity Forest Golf Club hosted the third annual Stevens Cup. Perpall was on the board of trustees when Trinity Forest was built, and the Beck Group constructed the clubhouse and was involved in the design. He invited me to his office in Dallas so we could talk golf and the influence it has had on his life. You will enjoy this interview. Since 1938, Better Auctions have always been Blackman Auctions. Find them on the web at blackmanauctions.com, and you can find all of their upcoming auctions right there on their website. We are back with Fred Perpall after this.
Heading to El Dorado to check out some live music or to play Mystic Creek? Stay at the Haywood, the only boutique hotel in the middle of downtown and the Murphy Arts District. If you are spending a weekend in Hot Springs, make plans now at the Marriott Courtyard close to Lake Hamilton and Oaklawn. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotel Group manages both of these fine properties, and you will rest easy knowing that your every need is taken care of. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotels on the web at bphotels.com.
At Stevens, our philosophy is to invest every dollar as if it were our own. To seize opportunity. To anticipate rather than react. To deliver constant focus in an ever-changing world. And to pursue the objectives of our clients in order to help them reach their financial goals. A proven history of helping companies and individuals. Stevens. Member NYSE SIPC.
I'm Thomas Blackman with Blackman Auctions. I've heard it said that sometimes there are two best days with real estate ownership. It's the day you buy it and the day you sell it. Depending on where you are in your journey, let me help. If you're looking for that outdoor getaway or that home in the city, I can help. If you're looking at selling that outdoor property you haven't seen in 3 years, I can help. Or selling that home in the city that you've outgrown, I can help. Blackman Auctions is your one-stop real estate company. Since 1938, Better Auctions are Blackman Auctions.
Welcome back to this edition of From the Short Grass. I am Trey Schaap. Now on the tee with Episode 1, the President of the United States Golf Association, Fred Perpall.
Mr. Perpall, thanks for joining me on From the Short Grass. Thanks for inviting me down to Dallas in your office. Man, this is going to be a great interview. I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, I'm so happy we made this work. It's going to be fun.
Should I call you Mr. President? I mean, President of the United States Golf Association. That's big time.
You know, Fred is just fine. It's sometimes still is setting in, you know, just the fact that I do have this awesome responsibility and this awesome privilege. The game of golf has meant everything to me, and it's pretty cool to actually have a position where you can give back through a game that's given you so much.
When did you first pick up a golf club, and when did you fall in love with the game? Because you grew up in the Bahamas, right?
Yeah, I grew up in the Bahamas, and like many kids in my era, you know, I played every sport. You know, we had a very modest upbringing. You know, we grew up in a sort of what I would describe as a sort of lower middle class neighborhood. My mom was a cook. And my dad was a technician at the airline. And so like many kids of my generation, I played every sport. That's kind of what you did in the Bahamas to keep yourself busy. Because we didn't have a big house, it was sort of every day you had to go outside and find something to do. I grew up playing basketball as sort of my favorite sport. I also was a track athlete. I came to college thinking that I'd be a basketball player sort of basketball journey. It didn't take long to figure out I couldn't study architecture and play Division I basketball. And so I kind of focused on my grades and got an education as an architect. And when I first finished college was when I really, you know, first tried to play golf. I was probably a product of the Tiger boom. I got very inspired by, you know, watching Tiger play. At that time, I was still playing a lot of pickup basketball, but I started to dabble a little with golf on the weekends. I actually bought my first set at a pawn shop. But, you know, during that time in my early 20s, the game was just not very accessible for me. Like, there was really no easy and comfortable places to go play to hit balls. The one range we had actually, you know, was shut down to become a real estate development here in town. So there was nowhere really close or convenient to go play golf. And so I sort of went away from golf after trying to play in my early 20s. And then fast forward, you know, my career took off, and by the mid-30s, late 30s, I had earned the right to lead our company. And when my family returned to Dallas, you know, we joined a really nice country club here in Dallas, Northwood Country Club, and it actually hosted the 1952 U.S. Open. And even at that time, I was still not a golfer, but as I nestled into the club, I realized, like, all the guys and some of the gals were playing a lot of golf, and they were having a good time, and I was sort of missing out. And so, you know, just over 10 years ago, I sort of picked up the clubs again, and I really got serious. And I always say to people, that first time you hit a driver square in the face and that ball sort of takes off with the flight that you imagine, there's something about the flight of the ball, the exhilaration that goes through your body from sort of, you know, hitting it flush, and the time you spend out there with your friends, that you know you're going to be an addict for the rest of your life. And I've liked to say, like, I've been living the golf life for the last 10 years, and it's been a really good life.
Have you taken any lessons?
Oh, from the very beginning, coming back in. In fact, one of my great jokes in golf is there are going to be a lot of reasons I'm not good at golf, but lessons and equipment will not be two of them. So my first instructor was out at Northwood, and we worked really hard at the game. And then, you know, my journey in golf sort of paralleled our journey in building Trinity Forest, because early on in the game, I got introduced to Jonas Woods, who was our, you know, founder and president of Trinity Forest. And we signed up really early as a company to support the club, and I joined as a member. And then Jonas really allowed me to kind of help him with the construction and really some of the management of the facilities and how that would all come together. So I sort of became a wingman on his team. And our company ended up building the clubhouse and managing some of the other infrastructure. And so my journey in learning to play golf was also parallel with our journey in creating this golf course and golf club. And what a journey it's been. You know, so for me, learning more about the game as we tried to build a championship golf course and learning how to play the game kind of both dovetailed together. And it's really hard for me to separate the two. I think I've had a very unique entrance into the game of elite golf.
How often do you get to go back to the Bahamas, and where do you play when you go back there?
Yeah, well, we've been blessed. By any stretch of the imagination, you know, sort of a poor boy growing up in the inner city of Nassau, we've been fortunate to belong to, you know, a nice club there where we have a home. So we get to play a lot of golf when we go back. My dad is 84 years old now. And I've got four sisters that live in Nassau, and my wife is also from Nassau, so we get to go back a lot. And yes, we do play a lot of golf. The Lifer Key Club is a club that's very special to me. They actually gave me a scholarship to help me go to college.
Wow!
And my mom was a cook at that club.
Okay.
And, so imagine, you know, what life must be like to come full circle and to now be a member of that club and have the opportunity, you know, to go there and to play golf when I returned back to the Bahamas. And I always say this is the beauty of the American dream. Like, only in one generation you can go from cooking in the kitchen, you know, to sitting in the dining room as a member. And that's that journey, that short travel, but it's a long distance, you know, so to speak. That's not available in most countries, and that's one of the things that makes me proud to be an American and proud to be the president of the United States Golf Association.
What person influenced you the most when you were starting to learn the game of golf?
Boy, that's a great question. I think my mentors in golf really have been my mentors in life, and it's hard for me to separate like their mentorship in my game, in my golf game, versus their mentorship in my life. And I think those two things are really closely tied. I've had different kinds of mentors, so I couldn't really single one person out. I've got to start off with Jonas Woods, who really, like, Jonas is a really close friend, but he really flung open the doors of the game by inviting me in to help him with Trinity Forest. I was not a very good player at that time, not a very strong player, but Jonas allowed me to go around the country and kind of experience all these elite places in golf in order to help envision what our place could be like. So I always have to tip my hat to him. I've got another good buddy here, Sans Chipman, who is sort of about the same age. We're all kind of contemporaries. He loves everything about the game. He sort of knows everyone in the game and is very, you know, sort of historically oriented. He taught me the beauty of collecting, you know, golf books and reading on the history and reading about architecture. Of course, as a trained architect, it was easy to get into golf architecture, but I learned a lot of that from Sands. Bob Dedman, who is the owner and the chairman of Pinehurst, became one of my first great golf administration buddies. As we were trying to build Trinity Forest, we always thought we would host elite championships, and Bob kind of, you know, helped me understand more about the USGA and what the USGA was all about and what it stood for, and that kind of piqued my interest. As we were trying to attract the USGA to Trinity Forest, I was also learning more about the USGA, and Bob actually introduced me to Mike Davis, which is where my USGA journey started. So I think those are kind of three folks that I would have to, I'm sure I'm missing someone, but I would say those three folks really helped me at the very onset of my journey, you know, 10 years ago, to kind of figure out, you know, what the opportunities in the game would be like, not only as a player, but also as a contributor.
Let's take Jonas Woods for a second. That friendship there in Trinity Forest, I mean, unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
We love it.
Plot of land, yeah, just south of Dallas here, built on an old waste facility?
Yeah. Well, you know, as you think about it, if you want to build a championship golf course in a city like Dallas, where can you find the contiguous land? Obviously, all the great land has been taken. And I think one of the things I'm proud about at Trinity Forest, like, it's a great statement on sustainability and stewardship of the environment, because we took an old reclaimed dump site that was a construction waste site and we turned it into this, you know, nice jewel. I'm also really proud of the message it sends to that community. You know, here's an underserved community, you know, one just like the one I came from. The ability to actually demonstrate to that community that we actually care, that we're willing to make an investment in the community, we're willing to be down in the community. We hope at Trinity Forest we're very inspiring to the community. We hire the kids in that community. We want them to have a lot of interaction. We built the first tee site so that the kids in the community could learn more about golf, and we are actually very supportive of that. And then we rent the course out at a very nominal fee so that the charities around that course and those that are raising money to benefit the charities around the course in that community could actually be better because Trinity Forest exists. And I think that's a really important thing. Yes, we love that we have an elite, you know, place to play golf and a really nice, you know, savvy golf club. But we also like what that golf club can do for the community and for the city and hopefully this part of Texas at large.
It made a splash early on, obviously, yeah, with hosting the AT&T Byron Nelson. Yeah. I mean, that was big time, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, you know, look, we love the PGA Tour. We love, you know, and obviously at Trinity Forest, we have a lot of, you know, PGA Tour players.
Sure.
And so it was always nice because one of our main objectives was to bring the Byron Nelson back into Dallas proper. It had been hosted out at the Four Seasons, but that's really not the city of Dallas, and we wanted to bring the championship back into Dallas. Turns out, you know, because we're building on a reclaimed site, it made it very tough to actually build the facilities to host a PGA Tour quality event. We also are building in a forest, and, you know, all around Trinity Forest, we were able to fill in on wetlands because, you know, we were remediating a dump site, but we couldn't really fill in anywhere else. And so we really didn't have the contiguous land and the sort of ring roads and all of the adjacent property you need to properly stage a championship. And it was really tough. But for 3 years, you know, we had a commitment to do it, and we were very happy to do it. Turns out we're much better for amateur golf. Mm-hmm. Turns out we're much better for, you know, sort of elite championship golf. So we've pivoted. And we're now, you know, really focused on hosting elite amateur events. And you and I were at the Stevens Cup, hosted by our good friend Warren Stevens, and in memory of his dad, Jack Stevens, great Arkansians. Is that the way?
Arkansans.
Arkansans. Yep. And so we're real happy to be able to host events like that and to actually use our stewardship, our love of the game, to kind of inspire, you know, elite amateur play. And in 2025, we'll host the U.S. Junior Amateur. And in 2027, we'll host the U.S. Girls Amateur. And so, you know, for us, we're making lemonade out of lemons. And no, we were not good for a PGA Tour event, but we think we can make a difference in the game by hosting some of these elite amateur events.
Fred, everybody that I talked to at the Stevens Cup, they were blown away, from the players to the coaches to even some of the spectators that were able to get out there. And I know Mr. Stevens was very gracious that you guys hosted it, and I thought it went off well.
Yeah, well, we love the partnership, and we love, you know, first off, what a first-class event by a first-class, family and a first-class company in the Stevens Cup. We've been really proud of our affiliation. Warren and his team did a great job. But, you know, at the top of the sphere, like when we had the USGA Think of Championships, at the top of the pyramid is always the player. And I think that held true at the Stevens Cup as well. We wanted to really have a wonderful playing environment for the players. It's not easy to put on a, you know, true test for, you know, men and women at the same time. We think we achieved that. And then we wanted everyone to feel really included and invited and a really nice space. So I'm happy it came off well. We also got the cooperation of good weather. So that's kind of what we hope that the club would be a great place to play every week and a place where we can inspire better play by opening up our club, you know, to allow, you know, the amateurs in.
Right now, the big talk out there is the rollback of the golf ball.
Yep. Yep.
How do you feel on that?
Well, you know, there's no secret that the USGA and the RNA have been, you know, the main proponents of studying the impact of distance by the elite male player on the game of golf. Of course, we love, you know, elite male golf. I mean, look, I am a fan of golf. Mm-hmm. As much as I, you know, love serving golf, I am also a big fan. And I love to watch great players play. I like to, you know, one of the neat things I get to do is from time to time I get to play with great players. And some of these players have become my really good friends. And we have no axe to grind with them. But when we think about the amount of land we're consuming, when we see people designing 8,000-yard, 8,200-yard golf courses, when some of the best places in golf, the venerable places in golf, are having to literally consume their neighbors in order to keep up with elite distances in golf, we have to ask ourselves, is it right to make all of these changes, to embed all of this cost, to be obtuse to what's good for the environment, only to accommodate 0.001% of golfers? And we think that we should not obsolete places that have been great to the game of golf. I mean, imagine in baseball, if because we were unwilling to regulate the bat, mm-hmm, or unwilling to regulate the baseball, that we could no longer play at Fenway Park, that we could no longer play at Wrigley Field,
somehow
we have to blow up the Yankees Stadium because we're unwilling to regulate how far the baseball goes because of the bat. Imagine if we gave baseball players aluminum bats, where pop flies now become home runs. We have a responsibility, just like every sport does, to make sure that those who are at the very top end, the elitists of the elite, do not embed cost and responsibility and a burden on the overall game that is just not fair. And I would also tell you, when you build these huge golf courses and when you keep making them bigger and bigger, it increases the amount of time you have to play. Now my walk from one tee box to the next becomes longer and longer. It increases the amount of cost to maintain that bigger ballpark, so to speak. It embeds much more expense, which makes the game more expensive, less inclusive, and it flies in the face of everything we're working on, which is to open the game up for more people, to reduce the cost, and therefore increase the access. And we think we have a responsibility to think about what's good for the overall game. And so this is not an indictment on the elite male player who is doing his job. He is doing his job by getting bigger and stronger and more athletic and using technology at his advantage. He is getting better, and he is doing his job. But we, those of us responsible for all of the game of golf, we have to do our job too. And we have to think about what is good for the overall game. And just like I enjoy going to Fenway Park and to Wrigley Field, and when I get the opportunity to go to the Yankee Stadium, just like I understand the connection to the history of that game, these wonderful cathedrals of the game also have a great connection to the history of our game. And we think we need to do what's right for all of golf. We need to do what's right for our venerable sites. And we need to take care of the 80 million golfers and not allow 5,000 golfers to actually embed complexity and cost and irresponsibility in an overall game. And I have no doubt that 4 years from now, when this is implemented, this will be a big nothing burger. The equipment manufacturers are really good. They're doing their job.
They are.
And they will create a ball that is equal to the experience for the average golfer that the current ball is. This is about the top end of speeds. I have buddies come up to me all the time. Oh, you're rolling the ball back for me. I say, hey, buddy, listen, you're a 4-index. And a 4-index is a really good player. But I play with you all the time. I'm a 4-index. Like, we don't hit the ball squarely enough, consistently enough, to notice the 3 or 4 yards we might be missing. In fact, we could get that 3-4 yards back tomorrow by just increasing our smash factor, by stretching a little bit more. This is not about those of us that swing the club at 100 miles per hour. This is about the folks who are smashing it at 130, that have ball speeds that are approaching 200. This is about the restrictor plate we need to put at the very top end of speeds. And when we proposed the model local rule, we heard loud and clear from the PGA Tour, from the PGA of America, from the equipment manufacturers, that they were not interested in bifurcating the equipment. We thought the solution really was to deal with the problem where the problem existed. But we also listened. And in listening, we incorporated all of their ideas as well. So a good solution sometimes, a good compromise sometimes, is when everyone walks away not feeling exactly happy. Like when no one got exactly what they wanted. This was not exactly what we would have wanted, but we are willing to compromise for the good of the overall game. And I think in time, it does take a little courage to do what's right. It does take the willingness to be a little less popular with some people you really care about for a short period of time to do what's right for the overall game. And I think history will show that addressing this issue, probably we are a little late to it, but it was the right thing to do. It's a good thing to do. And now is the time to do it.
I'm glad you said what you said, because now I get it. You know, I didn't get it at first, but now I get it. When you put it in that context of, we might have to, I mean, what happens to Pebble Beach? It doesn't have anywhere to go. What happens to the old course, St. Andrews? It doesn't have anywhere to go. Wrigley Field, I'm a huge Cub fan. I mean, when you put that into context, Mr. Paul, I mean, it's like, okay, I get it.
Yeah. I mean, would you want to wake up in a world where those places didn't matter anymore?
No.
I mean,
no.
We know that winning a open championship at the old course is a special thing in golf. It's part of what attracts us to the game.
Yes.
Would we want to obsolete these places? I think over time, we're not doing this only for those places, but I want you to understand one other thing on this point. It really is a copycat league. So when we see our most special places in golf, those that can afford to do it. I once had someone say to me, aren't you really only talking about 40 places in golf that host elite male championships? You're talking about changing the ball for 40 places in golf. I said, no, it's a copycat league. When the course down the street that hosts the elite championship builds a 670-yard par 5, then every other course in their town thinks, in order to keep up with them and to be held in the same esteem, I have to redo my course. And you can see it. If it didn't matter, then why is it changing so much? We know that the average championship course built today is almost 1,000 yards longer than those built 25 years ago. So don't tell me that distance doesn't matter. We know, in fact, as the USGA, one of the things we look at when we're qualifying your course for a championship is, what are the carry distances on bunkers? Like, that's a real thing. In order to test the best players in the world, you have to have bunkers in the fairways that are covering the distance of 320 yards. Now, when that distance becomes 340, that means I either have to pick up my bunkers and move them up, or I have to take my tee box back. Like, this is literally what we have to do in order to keep challenging the overall game.
And then it costs money.
It costs money. And by the way, it costs those who it matters least to the money. Right. So it's a complete misalignment in terms of who's paying for all these changes and actually who the changes are for. The last thing I would say on this point, and I don't want to have too much hubris on this, because I do want to have some humility to understand that change is tough for everyone. And whenever there's any change, we sort of get up in arms in the game of golf. But I want to remind our listeners that, you know, not too long ago, we had two different golf balls in the game of golf. There was the small ball and the big ball. And you'd have to, when you went overseas to play in the championships in Europe, you had to adjust to the small ball. And then you came over to the U.S. This has been going on for a very long time. This is not new. You know, people getting in an uproar over equipment changes. But we know, like, over time, the golfer adjusts. Over time, the game itself sustains itself. And we think this is really the right thing to do. And look, the fact that golf is going really well right now is why we ought to do it. People say, oh, don't do it right now because golf is in such a good shape. And then if golf was not in a good shape, it's like, oh, don't do it right now because golf is in a tough shape. The time is always right to do what's right.
This is Thomas Blackman of Blackman Auctions. Looks like this podcast has really taken off. The guests are incredible. Stories are captivating. It might be Trey's hard work and dedication to the sport of golf and his sincere interest in his guests. Or could be the support of an 85-year-old auction company that does real estate and industrial auctions all over the country and is owned by a guy that doesn't play golf worth a flip. You guys listen to the podcast. I think you know the answer. If you want to learn about the game of golf, listen to Trey. If you want to know about auctions, call me. Since 1938, Better Auctions are Blackman Auctions.
Heading to El Dorado to check out some live music or to play Mystic Creek? Stay at the Haywood, the only boutique hotel in the middle of downtown and the Murphy Arts District. If you are spending a weekend in Hot Springs, make plans now at the Marriott Courtyard close to Lake Hamilton and Oaklawn. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotel Group manages both of these fine properties, and you will rest easy knowing that your every need is taken care of. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotels, on the web at bphotels.com.
Strength is measured not by the number of accounts. Strength is placing value on relationships. It's having the vision and the guts to invest in growth. It's the commitment to responsibly manage your money. At Stevens, we believe that our strengths build success, not only for us, but for our clients. Stevens, member NYSE, SIPC.
Welcome back to this edition of From the Short Grass. As we get ready to say goodbye to 2023 and look forward to 2024, I hope you get to play more golf in 2024. I want to thank Matthew Allen and Blair Allen, one of our great sponsors of From the Short Grass, Beachwood Pinnacle Hotel Group. They know how to manage hotel properties. Find them on the web, bphotels.com. I want to thank Fred Perpall, the president of the United States Golf Association, for taking some time and sitting down with me. Part two of his sit-down interview with me comes your way in our next episode. Remember, when you find your ball mark on the green, as always, fix it and a couple of more. And I leave you with Auld Lang Syne. I hope to see you soon from the short grass.
You've been listening to From the Short Grass, a weekly podcast dedicated to the game of golf. This has been a presentation of the Buzz Radio Network.